Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Clinical child psychologist Dr. David Coleman joins me now to answer your parenting questions. Hello, David.
Good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
Great, and good to have you with us. And of course, people can keep sending questions in. You can text 51551, email todaycb at rte.ie or WhatsApp us on 0870 32 32 32. So David, let's start with this one. This is about a teenager. My 14-year-old, says this listener, has recently had a diagnosis of slow processing disorder. Very bright, but struggles with organising his affairs. He's always late. Timing in school exams is a problem. It can really affect the family dynamic. He's also a teenager who's fighting for his independence and doesn't like being micromanaged. Have you any ideas as to how best to support him?
Yeah, so I think just for some of your other listeners, maybe just in terms of understanding what slow processing speed actually means. So it's not about intelligence, but it's about how quickly he can kind of take in information, work through that information, and then respond to information. And so really what that means is it's going to affect almost everything. You know, so when it comes to instructions that he gets, you know, if he receives several instructions all at the one time, he may, you know, struggle to take in the first ones because the most recent ones are the ones that take up all his processing space. You know, when he's trying to plan for things in terms of his executive functioning, that's going to be affected as well. So a lot of the difficulties that he probably faces will come across almost like he's being kind of lazy or defiant because, you know, he just might not get around to things. And so that can often lead to a lot of frustration. So it's good that the mum or the dad in this instance actually understands what's going on. But it sounds like that still, you know, leads to an element of frustration. So I think the first starting point for them as a family really is with patience. And so, you know, rather than kind of getting frustrated with him and saying like, why can't you just be on time? You know, maybe it's like saying something like, you know, look, I know your brain might work in a different way. And so we've got to try and sit down together now and see how we can work with it. Because, you know, if he doesn't like this being micromanaged, you know, if he's got this big issue with kind of presumably being nagged or versions of being nagged, maybe it's about, again, trying to just see, can you do some collaborative, you know, problem solving with him rather than continually being the one to tell him what to do. So you might sit down, you know, if things are calm, so not obviously in the heat of the moment if something's going wrong, but you'd be sitting down saying something like, look, I know you hate being nagged. I don't really like doing it either, but we can't keep going like this. It's not fair for you. It's not fair for the rest of us. You know, we all end up getting frustrated. You know, can we see, is there a better way that we can organize things? For example, you know, when we need to go somewhere, what would help you to make sure that you're ready? And so then it's not about telling him what, you know, you expect him to do, but trying to see, well, what kind of help would he actually like? And then maybe you can find the way to give him that help without it coming across as nagging. And the other thing, you know, I suppose is you could practically be looking at, you know, what does he need, maybe in terms of like schedules, alarms, timers, all that kind of stuff can help, you know, particularly with some of the planning and the organizing stuff, the stuff that might actually cause real frustration within the family. And so that might be, you know, presumably if he's 14, he probably has a phone, you know, could he set alerts on his phone, for example? Could you have like, you know, checklists? Could you have a little whiteboard thing on your fridge that, you know, just has kind of key things to be done that he can just come and go and check on? Because again, if you've given him information, say, for example, if they're, the mum is working and he's kind of at home and she expects him to have a couple of chores done before she comes back, you know, she might tell him those chores, you know, the night before or in the morning. And chances are by the time she's gone out the door, he's forgotten what they are. And
yeah.
So it might be about having those lists available for him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just wondering as well about when it comes to education, it must be incredibly difficult for him. You know, if you're told to do three things to solve a problem, but you,
yeah,
you remember the last one that you're told, but not the other two.
Yeah. And so the key there is to really go in and make sure that you're sitting down with whoever's in charge of the special education within the school and seeing what kind of supports they have for him. You know, so is he entitled to things like extra time and exams? You know, could he have access to a laptop? You know, maybe in terms of the homework, it might be about trying to reduce the homework load. And so it's about sitting down and checking all those things with the school directly, but also even checking in with him about how he feels it's going.
Yeah.
Like it is the case, like a lot of teenagers, you know, they won't come and tell you that things are bad because they'll be afraid that you're going to be cross or upset. Or maybe they're just embarrassed that they're struggling in some way. So sometimes we have to actually broach these things and say, look, you know, I'm guessing things aren't going so well in school. You always seem in bad form by the time you're coming home or whatever it might be. And then see, can you come to understand where are those sticking points in school and are there extra things that can be done to help them so that it reduces the pressure and stress on them.
All right. Well, the best of luck to that family dealing with that. Let's move on now to this 10-year-old. And this listener says, my son is 10. He goes to a small country school. He won't play any team sports. Therefore, he's not really in with the other boys. I've been told by his brother that the boys are mean to him. I've spoken to the teacher and she says everything is okay. His two best friends are girls, but they go their own way. He won't open up about it. What can I do? I mean, is there anything they need to do? I mean, if the child is okay and coping, should you just leave things as they are?
Well, you know, I am a big believer, you know, if things ain't broke, you know, you don't fix them. And so some of it is about trying to understand from him directly whether these things that the man sees as potential issues or that his brother has seen as a potential issue are in fact bothering him. And so some of that will come from, you know, I mean, obviously there's only a couple of weeks left of school for him. But, you know, how does he seem going in and out of school? And does he seem relatively settled and happy himself, even though he might be a bit socially isolated? And it sounds like he's more socially isolated with the boys in the class rather than the girls in the class. And so then it's about just letting him know that you know that you see him, that you're ready to listen, that you're not trying to rush in with solutions. Because I think that sometimes, I've probably said it here many times before, you know, when we try to impose, you know, kind of solutions or whatever, or we're giving advice that hasn't been asked for, it's most often rejected. And so if you're trying to fix a problem that he's not identifying as a problem, chances are you're going to get a lot of resistance from him. So I think it's about just letting him know what his brother is saying and what his brother is seeing, you know, checking in with his brother. And then, you know, if the kind of the observations of his brother remain consistent for the last couple of weeks of school, it might well be going back in to chat with the teacher so that at least come September when they're starting back, you know, there might be things that you can do in terms of, you know, building some of the connections with some of the lads in the class. There might be, even if he's not into the sports or the team sports, there might be other things that he can do with some of the lads from his class over the summer that might just build a little bit of connection that might, you know, set things in place then for when they all start back in September. And so that might be the way to do it. But I think it's just about, yeah, not imposing a solution to a problem that we don't even know exists, but mm-hmm. just being aware and letting him know that you understand that things could be difficult or that things maybe feel a bit lonely on occasion, particularly if the girls are, you know, friendly at times and then, you know, seem to be happy enough to be busy and not be so bothered with them at other times.
So gently does it with that one.
Gently does it.
Right, here's an unusual one, I think. My eldest son never got over having siblings. He's 17. He was 3.5 when his sister was born. He has been difficult since the age of 7. At 11, we took him to a family therapist, but we were told it was our parenting. Now my own relationship with him has deteriorated hugely. He makes very little effort in the house. For example, he only washes the dishes he has used and leaves the rest because his siblings have used them. His room is always a mess. He sees me as the enemy. Every interaction is confrontational. I find he's very little empathy and is very immature for his age. Is it possible to retrieve our relationship before he gets too old?
Goodness me. I'm surprised now that the family therapy suggested that this was an issue that was all about the parents, because it doesn't sound like it. It really does sound like it is about the dynamic that's there. And it certainly sounds like, you know, their son, I mean, the mom is probably intuitive like most moms and does understand him well. And so it sounds like the arrival of his siblings did cause, you know, a big impact for him. And that impact is probably something about loss, you know, the loss of the connection that he had with his mom or his dad, and maybe he's been grieving that, goodness knows, for like 14 years. And so if that hasn't yet been dealt with, then that's probably something that does need to be addressed. But I think, you know, if they're looking at the immediate relationship between the two of them, at least that's what the mom is interested in, I think maybe it's about trying not to be, I suppose, lecturing or demanding, but maybe saying something like, look, you know, I've been thinking about how hard things have been between us. You know, we just always seem to end up fighting. I know I haven't always got it right. You know, maybe we both feel hurt about different things. I just don't want that to be the only way that we can connect. You know, I'd really love us to find a way that we can understand each other again. So maybe, you know, it'd be great if we could just hang out, you know, maybe even talk occasionally, but just without it turning into a fight. And so that kind of conversation, I mean, I don't know how he'd react to that. Like, he might just, you know, snort, roll his eyes and storm off. I don't know. But it might actually also just give him the sense that, you know, you're not about trying to control him. You're not about trying to, you know, be the boss of him, but that you genuinely really are interested in him and want to build this relationship back up. And so that means, you know, that, you know, pick your battles with him, I suppose. You know, don't try and fight every argument with him. Maybe, you know, let some of them slide if you can. You know, can you find little moments of lightness? You know, so it might be just that you get to, you know, if you're driving somewhere together, that you could listen to something on the radio and suddenly, you know, both laugh at something. Maybe you might get to share an odd meal or take him out for like a milkshake or something. And again, there's a lot of research that shows, you know, it's not necessarily even about the quality of time we spend with teenagers. Sometimes it's just about the quantity of time that we spend with them that is important in terms of creating those opportunities for connection. And so I think that's the bit. But it's certainly not too late, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's always worth rebuilding and trying to rebuild and repair. And so that's, you know, repairing usually means, from a parent's perspective, acknowledging that, yeah, we might have got it wrong, but also then, you know, letting them know that we'd also like to try and fix that if that's the case.
Yeah. Okay. And good luck to them as well. Now, I want to come to this next one. And the reason I want to come to this one is because we're going to be examining this issue in more detail tomorrow, David. But we do get a lot of queries and questions about children and tummy aches. And I want to get your take on this before we do more on it tomorrow. So this listener says, I'd appreciate advice in relation to one of my 9-year-old sons. For the last 2 months or so, he complains that he had a sore tummy before bed. We don't believe he's feeling unwell, but we're wondering, could it be anxiety? We've asked him if he's worried about anything or if he has anything on his mind. He says no. I mentioned it to his teacher, and although he's quiet in class, he does get on great with everyone. Any help would be appreciated. And we hear this a lot, particularly when you're coming on, parents who are dealing with these mystery tummy aches and they can't pinpoint what's causing them.
Yes. And so I think in these situations, we always are just trying to be a little bit like detectives. But sometimes we have to go with our own gut intuition. And so, you know, if as a parent, you think it probably is anxiety that's leading to the sore tummy, because we know, you know, when we get anxious, adrenaline gets released. Adrenaline, one of the things it does is try and shift the blood flow in the body to get the legs and arms ready to run away or to fight against whatever the danger is, which means that some of the blood from the digestive system gets diverted to the legs and the arms. And so the digestive system, to an extent, will shut down, or it'll certainly slow down. And so there's a really physiological reason why children who feel anxious will have a sore tummy or will feel this maybe sudden urgency to go to the bathroom or something like that. And so, so we don't ignore the sore tummy, but I think it's about, and we don't want to dismiss it and say, oh, look, that's just anxiety, because it probably is a physiologically sore tummy or a pain in his tummy. And so I was just interested in the first line. I think, did you say that it was one of her 9-year-old sons?
Yes, so I'm assuming that they've got twins, right?
Yeah, twins or triplets even, or even quadruplets, who knows? Perhaps in this instance, the sore tummy going to bed could be a way to guarantee a little bit of extra mammy or daddy time.
Okay.
And this is pure speculation. And this is what I mean about, you know, when we try and be detectives, that we sometimes just have to go with our gut intuition and maybe let that guide us, but not by asking lots of questions. So if I was the mom or dad here, I'd be saying, you know, I've often noticed that coming up to bedtime, you know, you do get this sore tummy. I think that's really hard for you. I think you really like it though when me or your dad or your mom, you know, are available to come and rub your tummy. I think you really like that, because usually that seems to solve it. And so I wonder though if it's just nice for you to have that extra time with us, and maybe that's something that you just really need. And it'd be interesting to see how he'd react to that, because that might then give you a sense of whether it is just the best way that he's found to get that little bit of special attention within what could be a very busy family, or that, you know, kind of minor competition that can be there sometimes for twins in terms of time and attention. attention, given that they're both at the same developmental level. And particularly when they've already been into the teacher and the teacher said, no, look, everything seems to be fine. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's hope that that helps. And again, a reminder that we will have more on recurrent tummy pain in children coming up on the show tomorrow. But for now, David, thank you very much. And until we speak again, which will be in the next couple of weeks, thank you very much for being with us. That's David Coleman there, clinical child psychologist. We'll take a very quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.